And I know a lot of guys that went to the penitentiary.
Tell them about the high school.
And the Cherokee Strip.
Cherokee Strip, that's right. And just
revise
this time,
Mr. Buzzard. Well, yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't as good as Herbie. Herbie's had to make a living. And I got to do it. The country was full of them, and the whole thing.
What am I
doing?
And whatever?
You couldn't tell what that fella was on the square or not, you know. You didn't know nobody. And old Judge Parker in Fort Smith would send you to penitentiary for that, you know.
Uh-huh.
You didn't have somebody to back you up. Well, it's the goddamn son of a bitch that was crooked. Do anything in the world to you. But they took our land away from us, you know, and opened it up for settlers, you know. Well, we'd done spent a lot of money for the fencing this 2,500 acres of land, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to pay so much a year for the lease on it. That's where they done the Cherokees. Cherokees and the Indians never signed a treaty with the United States. You knew that, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Well, they never did.
This was around what, 18? Around what time, Mr. Wood?
That was in 1896.
Uh-huh.
But we had built this ranch up then. We had 3,000 head of cattle. And we had to move them. Because you couldn't get nothing for them. They'd give you $4 for a cow, yeah, the government price, and then if you had a good calf, he'd give you $5. That is the price they put on them. Well, nobody wanted to buy them. Nobody didn't want no cattle. So we moved them to Mexico. Tijuana.
Did you sell them over there?
No, we didn't sell them. We kept them there, and then finally sold them a few at a time, you know, 2,000 or 3,000. That's the way that they done the Indians, you know. These damn sons of a bitch, you know, bastards that are in charge of the government was crooked.
Uh-huh.
Just as crooked them days they are right now.
Yeah.
Philip Sheridan was a general.
Sheridan?
Yeah. Both of these, and Kicking Bird was a Mexican chief. And he got killed. And some of his own people killed him. But I knew Black Kettle and Chief Rogers and a whole bunch of them old chiefs. I knew them, you know, and they were all a bunch of thieves.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they knew. Cookie to hell. As they could be. Once in a while, but this old judge, federal judge Scott there at Fort Smith, Parker, Judge Parker. Mm-hmm. You see, you couldn't appeal them days.
Couldn't appeal?
No, if you got stuck, you stuck. Yes. So they carried me down there one time to try me for running a horse race. Mm-hmm. It was a federal law to run a horse race. Well, Mormon Pruitt, I don't know if you ever heard of him or not, he was a good lawyer.
Uh-huh.
In Mormon, it was Oklahoma City.
Uh-huh.
And I got a telephone call to him. He said, "Where are you at?" I said, "I'm at Lawton." Lawton is just a rag town. It wasn't a dozen people town.
Uh-huh.
White was a lot of Indian kids over. And so he said, "I'll be there in the morning." Old Judge Vault sitting on the bench. Judge Vault says, Pruitt says, "What are you going to do?" He says, "I'm going to take this boy back with me." Well, he says, "He's got a case against him." He said, "What kind of a case?" And this Pruitt was a hard boy. He's an ex-convict himself.
Huh.
he told the old judge. He says, "Why, you got debit, says you can't send this boy penitentiary." He says, "He's an Indian, no Indian reservation." Judge says, "Well," he says, "he violated the law." He says, "What kind of law?" "Remember, tariff race. You know what a tariff race is?"
"No."
"Well, the tariff race is where they charge admission. We never charge for admission."
"Oh, I see."
"The Indians liked horse racing."
"Uh-huh."
"They'd make a bet, you know, I'd bet with you, or you could bet with anybody you want to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't charge no admission." So he went to him and said, "Well, the judge says you're a federal judge. Says you should know more about the weather than that." He says, "You can't send a man to penitentiary," he says, "for just running a horse race.
Huh.
Indian reservation, you ain't got no right." Old judge said, "Well," he said, "I never thought about that." This Floyd was a good son of a bitch, too. Poor fellow's dead now. He was my lawyer for years.
And he got you off?
Yeah, you've heard of Henry Starr, haven't you?
Henry Starr?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe I have.
He was my uncle. And Tom Starr was a great uncle of mine. He married the Belle Starr.
Huh.
He married Belle and her. She wasn't a Starr. She was from Carthage, Missouri. And anyway, to make a long story short, them people was, the Indians was the only one that you could trust. You couldn't trust the white men, even with their name.
How were their practices? How were their medical practices?
We didn't have none.
You didn't have none?
No doctors there. We had the Indian women, squaws, as the best doctors in the country. They knew more about doctors than we did.
Whereabouts was this where, I mean, no doctors were?
Well, in the eastern part of the state, what is Oklahoma now,
uh-huh.
Them days is IT, Indian Territory.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, they wouldn't, a doctor couldn't live there. He didn't know what the hell to do. He no towns. In Tuxie was a small place, mm-hmm. And so was Oklahoma City, was just a small town in them days. And Guthrie was the capital, and Guthrie wasn't known as nobody there hardly. But there was two or three doctors lived in Guthrie, and the old doctors were all right, but them young ones wasn't there. I never did have to go to them but one time, and I went to them once, and you know. But I'd take them fellas, two of them had been shot, you know, or something like that. Fellas get shot. And the closest doctor would be 8 or 10 miles, you know. And we'd take him there, and so I took this fella in there, and George Miller. I took him there, and this doctor, we had another fella with him. He had to tie him on a horse, because he was shot in the stomach through the side.
Mm-hmm.
And he had tie him on the horse, he couldn't sit on it. Well, we got there, and this doctor says, "Yeah," he says, "he took a chew of tobacco," and he says, "he's in a hell of a shape." And this fellow says, "Well, I know he is," and says, "I want you to do something for him." He says, "You can keep your mouth shut, can't you?" "I've got this kid here," he says, "what are you going to do with him?" "Well," he says, "the kid's all right." He says, "I'll trust him." But he says, "I'm going to tell you one thing, I'll pay you your price." "Why don't you charge me to clean this fella up and doctor that wound there?" He says, $20. $20 them days was a lot of money.
$20.
Yeah. And he says, "That's all right." He says, "Go ahead." So he cleaned the fella up and got through that hole, the bullet went through. And then he says, "Here's your $20. This fella says, "Here's your $20. And he says, "Now what else though?" He says, "That's all." He says, "Well, ain't you gonna give the kid nothing?" This fella says, "Yeah," and he handed me $20. I said, "No, I don't want anything." I said, "I'm doing what I come for a favor." Because I knew all them fellas, you know, and I couldn't afford to get in bad with them.
Right.
Yeah, they'd come back at night and steal your horse. So he says, "Well," he says, I understand that part of it all right. He says that the kid is a kid and all that, but he says, I'll give him something. No, he says, you don't need to give him nothing. He says, I'll give him this $20. He gave me $20. They had plenty of money. They robbed the bank at Darrell. Before, I didn't know nothing about that. But them guys didn't take after them bank robbers. Them days, they got out in the country, you know, there was no transportation, only just a horse and buggy or something like that. There wasn't no such a thing as automobiles or television, telephone, such as that. There wasn't nothing in the country. They went out there and brush after them, or they just got killed. They committed suicide, that is all. Well, what we call the circuit rider. They come around and stay with you a week, maybe, you know.
Those were kind of like preachers.
Yeah, they were preachers, but they'd come around and stay with you, and I want you to go 30 miles to church. Our closest church was in Sky Two, and the one in Tulsa. But we never went there to the church. They used to hold camp meetings. That days, the people weren't people that weren't church members were thieves. You know, they weren't church members. They kept their business to themselves. It wasn't like it is now. You can get up and go down to church. You wonder there wasn't no church to go to there. Them days, because we, my folks, more or less, my father was an Englishman. My mother was a church. And they my mother, she never did harp on the church, but the old man, he wanted us all to go to church, which was all right. I went to church. But there wasn't no such a thing as taking up a collection. They never thought about that. You could give them anything you wanted to, and the preacher come to your house, take care of him, and give him $5 or $10, and that's all, buy you any more. Doctors, same way. Them doctors used to go ride a horseback around to the ranches, you know, an Indian. See, no white people lived in there. It was all Indians. And they had them come around and stay with you for 3 or 4 days. The doctor would sell you a bunch of quinine and light draught pills and such as that. And he'd say, well, that's all right. To get off my board. No, the old man says, I won't pay you for it. He says, I don't want that. She says, oh, you. He says, you've got to make a living, do it. Well, he says, that's all right. The old doctor was all right, but he didn't know a hell of a lot about anything. Just a doctor, that was all.
What sort of man were these preachers? Were they just out for to get the money, or were they for
no,
legit?
No, they were just trying to live, and preachers. More or less, they didn't jip nobody or nothing like that they were afraid to. I guess, I don't know why. But they never bothered nobody. The preacher didn't, not as far as I know, and I knew quite a few of them.
Could you name quite a few? Could you name quite a few, a couple of preachers that you didn't mean?
Well, yes, one of them was named Broad. I remember him, his name was Broad, that's all I know. I don't remember his initials or name. He had two girls, and his name was Broad, and he had a ranch over close to Vernon, Texas. In Texas, he had a ranch over there. And he had rode a good horse, and saddle, carried a gun, till we had to have it. And then another one named Cooley. And for the name of Dr. Woodard, they called him. Called him Dr. Woodard. He was a preacher. But we didn't have no hijacking preachers in days like you got now. Roads?
How would one travel, you know, when, say with rain or... Well, how were the conditions during those
times? You had to go horseback or in the buggy, and it's all. There wasn't no other way to travel. Unless you went to railroad, and railroad was 40 miles away.
So you would say the early methods of traveling was just by wagon or horseback?
Well, yes, if we wanted supplies, we went in a wagon to Tulsa. That was 40 miles. Well, taking you all day to drive there and half the night and all day and half the night to get back. And there was really no such thing as a road. You just take it out through the brush and rocks and hills.
Say, you need to take a message some other place.
Take a message to a horseback.
On the horseback?
Yeah, I delivered a message. I got $25 one night for taking a message, a death message. Two women. They were American women, white women. And they were sisters. They hunted Drew a claim. And Frank James lived right close to me. I knew Frank and I knew his wife. So I asked him to go to Frank's house and he come in the rainstorm between Anadarko and Fletcher, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, Frank, if he knew these women. And he said, just know them slightly. He said, they'd come here one time and had dinner with us. Frank had a half dugout. That's one moon, half dugout. That's all the place that people had to live in them days. Didn't have no houses. And that's the log house they built. Well, he says, yes, it ain't. It's about 4 miles. Down here and there, turn to the right. I went over there and delivered this message. The woman paid me $25. Mm-hmm. The delivery man couldn't find nobody who knew the country. Mm. I made $50 a day locating people and settlers when they come in.
Really?
Yeah. When I was a kid. Huh? 16 or 17 years old and that. They wasn't anybody that knew the country, you know. You drove in here to this settlement. You had a number of your claim, but you didn't know where in the hell it was.
Right. Uh-huh.
See, so they had to have somebody that knew. And I would, they'd come to me and they couldn't get nobody else. They'd try, had a real estate man told me, didn't you? But he says, get that Bud kid, says, you know, I did do it. Mm-hmm. One time, I'll tell you this story, it might interest you. One time I went to an old woman and a boy come to the hotel in Anadarko. Huh. And the old woman says, we've got no money, but says we've got a claim over here and want to know if you know where it is. I said, have you got the corners? She said, yes. She showed me a map, and I said, I'll take you there. How far is it? I said, it's about 30 miles, 25 or 30 miles from here. I said, we've got to cross the North Canadian River and then drive down by Wildman and then to Carville County. She says, well, says Frank, will we take him or not? And he says, yes, says he's the only one we've got any information from. They gave me the money, paid me $25 right then. Going to locate him. Well, got to the Canadian River, we had to go down the river like this, you know, then go up the river a piece and get out. Where you had a horse and wagon, there wasn't no automobile roads, there wasn't any automobiles. Hell, if you'd ever seen one come in and run. So I rode in front of the wagon on the horse. And as you got to the top of the bank where there's two guys, one on each side, stuck us up with the Winchesters. Uh-huh. Bandits. And he says, kid, where are you going? I said, right here. He said, that's what I thought. He said, get down. I said, what are you? He says, this is, we want to rob you. I said, I haven't got the money. And he says, how are you going to eat? I said, neighbors feed me, I guess. So Indians, I knew all the Indians lived on the creeks, you know. And the old lady says, we haven't got any money. She said, just told this boy we didn't have no money. But you know, that old woman was smart as hell. She didn't show them guys her money. She had her money in a satchel in the back end of this cab, this sack. It had a thing you raised up like a spring on it.
Right.
And like a trunk, you know. Right. She had a satchel in there, an old camp meat satchel, about that long and about that big around. Uh-huh. And she had $30,000 in that damn satchel. Yeah. They'd come from Iowa, somewhere in Illinois, I think. But you know, a lot of people brought lots of money into that country. Especially the place of Mountain Park and Snyder.
Right.
Over. Wasn't so damn high, didn't you, there, Tom? You know, you could get a bushel of corn for 10 cents. Yeah. And you could buy a lot of things, you know. For a quarter, you could get 2 pounds of butter. Country butter in town for a quarter.
Quarter.
Yeah, and eggs was 8 cents a dozen.
8 cents a dozen?
Yeah.
It was kind of expensive in those days to get. Yeah. It was kind of expensive.
Yeah. But you know that people didn't have any money to buy that stuff with.
Okay.
And meat, we didn't have to buy no meat. We was plenty of deer, and there was antelope, and there was turkey, and there was prairie chickens, and quail, and all them things are abundant there. Mm-hmm. They let the damn people come out of St. Louis and Kansas City in there and shoot them all. I bet you today you wouldn't see a deer.
Well, now that we're talking about game, how were the farming methods? What some of the crops?
Well, they just went in there and turned over the sod, you know. And then they had what they called a sod planter, and they went right on top of that sod. They turned over as level as it was and planted their cotton and corn, and then they come up. I got that virgin land, you know.
Mm-hmm. Or, say a farmer, what would he go through for the day?
Farming?
Uh-huh.
Well, I never did farm any, but bought corn on the Arkansas River. 10 cents a bushel, we used oxen to haul it with.
Uh-huh.
And there was farmers in there that had a world of corn they couldn't do, and they couldn't nothing with their food after they raised it.
Uh-huh.
Nobody to buy it.
Flood?
Yeah. We had hurricane tornadoes. They called them tornadoes. They didn't call them hurricanes. They didn't know anything about that.
Huh.
Called them tornadoes. They'd come down between the mountains, and they wouldn't hurt nothing around the mountain, but to get in the valley, they'd just wipe it out. Tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
In that town, Snyder, I was there the night they had the first cyclone.
What, do you remember the date?
I don't know, it's in May 1905, that's all I remember.
That's cool.
I don't remember the date. But I had a good horse and saddle, and I was 7 miles from town when I seen this thing coming. And it come just like a, it looked about shape of an egg, but had a big tail hanging on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit them lakes, I knew the lakes there southwest of town. And it hit them lakes and just wiped them dry. To break, to take the fish out and throw them on the desert out there. And it killed some people too. It killed 125 people there that night.
Were you involved in any hurricanes?
No, I never did. Didn't ever get hurt right there.
You saw some hurricanes or after the after effects?
Yeah.
Elaborate on those?
Well, this town of Snyder, it killed 120 people, I believe, there, and 5 or 6, I don't know how many killed, didn't ever hurt an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Went through Indian village, never hurt an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse and Frank wouldn't kill nobody, thought they had to. I didn't know Jesse, but I knew Frank.
Mm-hmm. What about those this law enforcement officers, what would they do about it?
Oh, well, they weren't the lawyer. Old Frank Tillman, Bill Tillman's the only lawyer officer that I ever knew was worth a damn.
Huh.
Well, they went to them oil fields after they got statehood and put down riots, you know, and all that. They'd kill a guy and they always had witnesses to swear they'd self-defense or something and get out of it.
Huh.
But after they got statehood, in 1907, on the 7th day of November, why, it was different then. Teddy Roosevelt came out, he was president then. We went on a wolf hunt. I loaned him my horse. I had a fast horse.
Huh.
And he wanted to see this man that gets the coyotes with his hands, you know. Did you ever hear that?
No, sir.
Well, I knew him. And he'd ride his horse, and he'd see a coyote, he'd get him out across the country where he was flat. And this horse would lope up beside him, and he'd just drop off his horse and grab him by the nose, just like that.
Wow.
And he had a little rope around his waist, and he'd jerk that out and wrap it around his mouth and tie it and hang him on the saddle. Teddy Roosevelt said he never seen nothing like that in his life. He said, thank God. He said, I'm going to make you WS Marshal for the western part of the state. Yeah. And he did, too. Thank God he made you U.S. Marshal.
What state was that?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Exploration.
Oil industries never got in there good till. Well, they drilled a well on our place in 1894-95. They drilled a well there and got oil, but they plugged it up right away and went off. Left the country. I don't know where the hell they went or who they were, but they had a wooden bird. The land wasn't long till a lot of people come in there in oil business. You say, well, Derek's hundreds of them everywhere you live. From the school that I went to, there was in Tulsa. They had ten of us in the school, and that's all there was, one in open house. All Indians were in full bunch. And I was Cherokee, and I went there with them too. Mm-hmm. They couldn't, none of them talk English, and I couldn't either.
And what would they teach in the school, or what?
Well, they'd teach you the letters A, B, C, you know, first. Huh? And then the, no matter what the age you was, they'd learn the ABCs. And then they would get into the adding, subtracting, and such as that. And learn them to read and write. Huh? And it was quite a job for a teacher. They only paid a woman $30 a month. What the hell, they didn't get no money.
Were they usually women or men that were teachers?
Well, they preferred women. They could get them cheaper than men. Yeah. You see, a man wouldn't fool around for $30 a month. That he had to. Okay. He'd go on the ranch and get a job. What you get.
Mm-hmm. And would this kid stay in school, or were they hard to bring to school, or would they just, you know, continue? Or?
Their folks would bring them until they got, you know, they're scared to go by themselves. Hmm. And that's where they'd come in there with feathers in their hair and everything. There was just one girl, she was half Indian. Her name was Blair, and she lived on Standpipe Hill, and we lived on Standpipe Hill across the road, and we had leased the land right close to it. It had a tank on that water.
Yeah.
And we put our cattle in there and bought corn at 10 cents a bushel and paid them out. And, on the river, nobody would buy the corn. Mm-hmm. Nobody to buy it. Nobody had any money.
What were the diseases, I mean, the most severe diseases during those times?
The what?
The disease, you know, sicknesses.
Sicknesses?
Uh-huh.
We didn't have them.
Or epidemics or something?
We never had no epidemics or nothing. And Indians never did eat up there. Not while I was there. They didn't. And during that cyclone they had there, it smattered and killed the people. There was only one Indian was injured, and he lived on Otter Creek. And he wouldn't have got hurt if he hadn't caught hold of a sapling. He whipped him up and down again in the ground, he would turn loose. I says, I knew the Indian, big tree boy. I says, why didn't you turn loose that step? She said, I'm afraid to blow me away. I went to the American Army in 19. I enlisted in Fort Logan, Colorado. Let me see a minute. I believe it was 1915. Yeah, I enlisted in 1915 in Fort Logan, Colorado. Judge Nancy was there in them days. He was going to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. I think he was. I don't know if he went or not. And I tell you another fellow that was there. It was Tom Conley. He used to be Senator Tom Conley. You remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was there. He was a lieutenant in the Army at Recruit Barracks, Fort Logan. And then they shipped me after we got training there a while. They shipped us from there to Salt Lake City. What's the name of that post they built for Salt Lake? Fort Wingate, Arizona. Utah. They shipped us over there for training. And then they come back to Des Moines, Iowa. And then from Des Moines, they shipped us Picatinny Arsenal, Dover, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You ever hear of that place?
No, no.
Well, that was a arsenal during the Civil War.
Arsenal?
And they made bombs there and everything, that arsenal. They wasn't worth it there. Mm-hmm. Couldn't keep the Germans off of them. So then from there we went to Camp Divins over Massachusetts. And there I got out of the Army and I joined the British Army and I went to England. Mm-hmm. And stayed over there in England until 17 till the armistice was signed. Then they sent me to Germany, Koblenz, Germany, and I was stationed there for 5 months before I got out of the British Army. Mm-hmm. And it was all right. The British is all right. They're good people and they're good fighters too.
Right.
Yeah, them British will fight, them French won't.
Oh.
They'd win a battle and all get drunk and lose.
What was your rank during while you were in the Army?
I was a buck private and went in, everybody is. But I made a sergeantcy and in Camp Divins here in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got tired of the damn been fooling around and I went to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And enlisted in the British Army. They couldn't have done with me. I was in the Army, goddammit. They couldn't send me nowhere. So I knew that, and I went training with the 15th Battalion Canadian Grenadiers. Well, after I got in England, I was on special duty. And they would put you on anything they wanted to do, you know, special duty. You done anything you was told to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always did anyway. Didn't have to be on special duty to do it, but I did. And I got along all right. And then they put me in as inspector of the horses and mules. You know, they had 80,000 head of animals there, hauled
mm-hmm.
65 miles from London. And they furnished me an apartment to live in London and give me a sidecar to take me out in the morning and bring me back at night.
Really?
Yeah. And, chauffeur and everything. And then we went, they sent us to France, to West France, and we were stationed in the old Napoleon Barracks. The damnedest place I've ever in my life, I'm telling you the truth. It was built on the side of a little hill like this.
Right.
And there was no ditches around it or nothing. It rained, the water had run right down the river a bit. Mm-hmm. You're sleeping on the ground, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
with some straw under us. Your mattress is straw. By God, I'm telling you, I'd get up a lot of times to get the hell out of it.
Say, what year was around? What time was
that,
this?
That was about 1917, before the armistice was signed, 1918.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was about the spring of 1918, but it rained so damn much over there.
Then you came back to the States, or?
And I was shipped back to the States then.
Or how it was during those times and bringing you up? Or?
Well, I'll tell you, my parents were actually, my mother was an Indian, I lived among the Indians, she was all was there, just mm-hmm. Indians.
Right.
Territory had lots of Indians in it, you know that?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Lots of them. I can't remember all the tribes, but I knew a lot of them and could talk to nearly all of them. But, it wasn't bad living there. I'd better be there today than here.
Mm-hmm.
We had plenty of meat, as I told you a while ago.
Right.
And white people come in there and kill all the game. They're taking the Indians' guns away from them and ammunition. They couldn't hunt, but they didn't have them shoot with. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of deal they give the Indians, so mm-hmm. all them guys, I knew a lot of them all back in the Civil War, you know. They were generals. They were still active, you know. Mm-hmm. And I knew a lot of chiefs. Well, the chiefs were all sore about it, but they wouldn't say nothing if they killed an Indian, but whenever you killed a white man, that damn, they'd raise hell about it, see. Mm-hmm. Order to kill all the Indians in the town. Any white man honest will back me up on that. They wouldn't. You see, them days wanted to live and get along. Well, there were some Indians I know that were bad Indians, but the Sioux and the Crows and the Quapaws and all them, they were bad Indians. Mm-hmm. But the Kiowas in Oklahoma, they had shipped them from Tennessee and the Cherokees from Tennessee to the territory. Mm-hmm. Didn't ask them if they wanted to go, they just told them to get ready to get load on the train.
Yeah.
They shipped them up there just like cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Lost everything they had. They got up there, they didn't have the money. Well, here's the place for you to live, you can go and draw rations over the post. Well, the Indians said, let them draw rations a while, you know, and then they'd cut them down. The guys steal the rations and sell them. And they do it today, you know. You take this food deal here in the States, it's no good. They're all stealing that stuff.
Yeah.
And you know it and I know it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to prove it, you know, to make them understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's no good, and it didn't work then, days, it won't work now either.
So you mentioned some chiefs, you know, could you mention a couple of names of those chiefs?
The chiefs, Indian chiefs?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was, Kicking Bird was one, he was a Kiowa, and I knew him well, but he was killed, later on his own people killed him, and pardoned him. Because they claimed that he was too friendly with the white people.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Kettle and Big Tree was sent to penitentiary in Texas. I think he died in the penitentiary in Texas or killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it killed a lot of people.
Do you recall any superstitions some of the people or Indians had, or superstitions or legends?
You mean like the medicine men or something?
Uh-huh, right, yes.
Well, I knew a lot of them, yeah. They just a bunch of damn crooks.
Yeah. Or, let's say go to a wedding, or what took place in a wedding when?
There's no weddings, only Indians, that's all.
Uh-huh.
Kill a beef or steal one. They couldn't. They didn't have one, they'd steal one. The old man used to give them. The fellow's daughter's going to get married. He lived 15 miles from us. His son. And the old man would give him a beef.
Mm-hmm.
To hell they down. The yelling didn't cost us nothing. He'd give them away.
Huh.
And the grass didn't cost us anything, only the lease from the government.
Uh-huh.
And all of them things, but you could live. It didn't take all your money for taxes.
Uh-huh.
But nowadays they've got you taxed on every damn thing you do now.
How old were, what was the average age for one to get married?
Them days.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's just wondering if they had the kind of education they had. Now I'll tell you, a lot of Indian girls. But they'd get married if the folks would let them, you know. The Indians didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And the white men would marry them Indian girls at 12, 14 years old, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of them. I knew a lot of them got married at 12, 14 years. Well, they. And then the white girls, they'd follow suit, you know. They'd marry anybody, they'd marry them.
Mm-hmm.
this town in Red Fork, right north of Tulsi. I went to Indian wedding there one time. White man married an Indian girl. And she was 12 years old. I knew the girl, a young squaw, you know, 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And I went to the wedding, but I knew this U.S. Marshal. So the U.S. Marshal was there and arrested this fella for carrying a gun. Just something to make a noise, you know. That's all that guy. He wasn't a law again carrying a gun. Hell, I carried one all the time. Mm-hmm. Everybody else did too, I think. So he says, what do you...
That the man you knew, a police officer?
Yeah, this U.S. Marshal arrested this boy. And he was a young man then, too, this fellow was. He's an old man now, and he works for the state of Texas, mm-hmm. up here at near Presidio, Texas. You don't know where that is.
Presidio, Texas? Yeah. Uh-huh, yes, I do.
You? Uh-huh. You've been there?
No, I haven't been there. No.
I have. I was there at the second battle. We had run them all across the river. This girl was just a poor girl, you know, an Indian didn't have no money. Mm-hmm. So this fellow wanted to make a show, and this U.S. Marshal did, and he wasn't arrested this fellow. Mm-hmm. Well, about seven or eight of them old cowboys come up there. There's old cowboys there. He's a Red Fork. And he says, what are you going to do with it? He says, what is your business? He says, a whole lot of my business. He says, you got a gun? He says, you're damn right I have. Mm-hmm. He says, where are you from? He says, from Texas. Well, I said, I ain't afraid of nobody from Texas. Well, he said, by God, I ain't afraid of nobody from Oklahoma either, territory. Mm-hmm. So this fellow said, I'll give you mine. You let me pull it out, it'll be a smoking when I pull it out. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, where's this? Don't shoot me, don't shoot me. He commits and hollered both heads up and says, I know I'm no trouble. Well, he says, you're goddamn sure going to get it if you don't turn this man loose and leave him go. By God, he made him. And just such as that happened all the time. Always some guy want to make trouble, you know. Huh. He takes Henry Starr and Louis Estes. Louis was lived at a little town in Arkansas, but that's a new one. And they'd been robbing banks all up and down the country in Arkansas and the territory, too. And the people got afraid to go in the banking business. Well, the Dalton boys lived at Crawfordville, Kansas. So they tied together and got with them. There was a gang of them, and by God, they rode that town, they had something better pop. They come in to Stride and rob two banks in one morning, and just there till they open. And they made these bankers walk ahead of them and carry the money to the stockyards. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know nothing about it. I was down at the stockyards, had some horses come in there. And my dad didn't, so... I didn't know about them. I seen horses tied around the stockyard, and I didn't know who they were. Never thought about them. That damn, I seen all these guys come walking down there. And one of them says, what are you doing here? Louis Estes. Now I knew Louis Estes. And I says, we just come down here to check up on these horses. Well, he says, that'd be all they're going to check on now. I says, that's it. All right, so they got on the horse and rode off with the money. Robbed both banks in one morning.
One morning.
Yeah. That's not that's the kind of people we had to live with. You know?
Were these criminals, were they in nature, mean or just out to killing or just out to rob banks?
Just out robbing banks. They wouldn't kill anybody that they had to. Huh. They'd come into Texas and make a raid. Or if they got caught, well, they'd try them under Texas law.
Uh-huh.
These Indians didn't know a damn thing about law, you know. Jesus right. Christ couldn't even read and write. They knew nothing of what they were charged with. You guys get up there and ask them if they're guilty. You say, what the hell are they talking about? So, this chief, I believe it was rattling my kettle, but what the hell was in the big trees? And I think it said it was something special of penitentiary. It was for my time, but I knew about it. Knew a lot of the young warriors, you know. Yeah, I traveled with Villa two or three times. Made one trip to Mexico City with him. And made a trip to Casas Grandes with Villa. And an old Model T Ford, and the damn thing broke down.
what year was this?
In 1913. Uh-huh. That's the year they accused him of coming into the valley and robbing trains down here, just that he never did do that. Uh-huh. Some of his men might have done it, but I don't believe they did. I just have to just think a long time for accusing any of them boys or anything like that. Now, he had a bunch of Americans working for him that would do any damn thing. Dude, you take this. I forgot that fella's name. He was from El Paso, and he rode up to the fire one night at Kenner Casas Grande, who was camped. And that time, Francisco Amadero was the president. He declared himself president. You remember that much? Mm-hmm. Well, Francisco said that send that American up. The guard stopped him out to the post, you know, before he let him come to fire, and disarmed him. And he had a gun, had a rifle, and had a 45 Colt's automatic pistol, and he take him. Brought the fella on up to the fire. And Villa wasn't there. And before Villa entered the junta, you know, he says, ask him what he wants. Well, that was me and General Felipe Angeles could speak English. So he was a scholar, you know, that guy was. He wasn't nothing about it. He was a smart, intelligent man. Mm-hmm. Had a nice family, too. I met his wife and daughter, and rode on the train with them too. They had a damn down there. I don't know what they were going to do. Got too And he says, well, what did you want, partner? He said, I want to talk to the president. And of course, he done interpreting, and I said, no. He says, he says, you were charged with any crime on the other side? No, sir, he says. And he says, well, you're free to, if you go join us, they couldn't come and say you was a bandit or anything like that. Well, he said, if they did, I'd deny it. And that's all I said. They told him, well, they'd give him a job. So he went in just as a common soldier, you know. But he was a smart sucker. You know, that guy went over and looked up beside a train. All of that damnation and stuff had to come through Juarez, you know, go to Mexico City.
Right.
And he looked up the side of this train, freight train, and pulled in 12, 15 cars on it. And he says, told the engineer, he says, stop this train. He said, I'm going to kill you. He says, well, he says, all right. He stopped the train. Well. And he only had about 15 or 20 men with him, you know. This fella didn't. Yeah, they were back in the brush. And he said, I've got 600 men back there. He said, they're all heavy armed. He says, you fellas throw your guns overboard. They carried one car ahead, you know, a flat car with soldiers on it, one in the back of the caboose with soldiers on it. You know, he disarmed the whole goddamn That's a fact, yeah. I forgot his name, wasn't Marmers, I forgot what I knew his wife when he got killed. He got killed in Mars. And told General Felipe, he says, what'll I do with all these men? He said, I've got their arms. And he says, I ain't got men enough to carry them. He says, well, my God, he said, we'll send a wagon down there. They said, wagon, had some American wagons. Got bought from the United States Army. Right. And he sent a wagon down to Dampity and get a load of guns, ammunition. All them guys captured the whole damn works. But I forgot his name, but he got shot in Horace up on that side. You ever been to Horace?
No.
But up on the side of that hill. And like this, that's up on the side of the hill, and they didn't have no cannons, you know. Via didn't have no cannons. And I told General Felipe, I said, well, hell, there's one sitting in that place over in El Paso, Civil War cannon. Well, he says, how are we going to get it? I said, give me about 10, 12 Mexicans, I'm going to get it. He said, give me more than that if you want them. I said, well, I don't want enough men to get the damn thing. Of course, the river, we had to pull it over the rocks. Hey, the bottom of the river there was loaded with rocks. And we went over and got this cannon at 12 o'clock at night. I told the chief of police in El Paso what I was going to do. And I said, don't you send a bunch of men down there and shoot us up. So I won't bother you. He said, go ahead. They would go for Villa. You know, Villa had a lot of plans, you know. And so he did. He sent over a bunch of men over on this side. And we went and got this cannon and pulled it out by hand, pulled it down there and crossed the river with it. Mm-hmm. Got it up on the side of that hill like this, and the load didn't have nothing into the load, but shooting. So we taken the old truck. It was a Riker. I never seen nothing like it in my life. It was wore out when we got it. Riker truck. I don't know if you ever seen one or not. But anyway, they drove that thing over to the foundry there and shoveled up a bunch of them punchings, you know, out of iron where they made these girders for houses. And they put that in the cannon first, put some paper and threw that in their cap. And then they... We don't even got these about 8 or 10 shovel loads of punchings out of that iron to shoot in this cannon. That's all we had. And I knew how to load the damn thing and how to put the cap on. So that was my job after they got it loaded with the wild leaf punches and the fuzzies, you know. Why they put the cap on and then they got a guy to shoot it. Some sergeant came up and said, he'd shoot it. Well, Angela said, now if you can't shoot that thing, he says, you leave it home, let this kid in it, what do you say, can shoot that thing? He says, he's a good. Then he said, if you want me to, I'll turn it over to you. He says, go ahead and try it. Well, the Grand Sisters was camped in the church, the old Catholic church, down the foot of the mountain there. You never been to Horace?
No, no.
Well, I couldn't, you can't, you wouldn't enjoy the story much. But anyway, this, these Grand Sisters were sleeping on the floor in this church. And they never thought about that, and this guy turned down and shoot, you know, the bone that cannon down, and blew the hole, you could drive a team wagon to it in that church. Didn't hurt a soul.
It's all right. It just went out.
Yeah. Well, of course, I didn't know him only during the war, you know. Revolution. But Villa was a good man. Now, I'll tell you, a lot of people, you know, say a man gets in public life, somebody's not, you kind of going to please everybody, you know. The Mexicans even killed him. Had him killed or on the road. And, Villa was a fella that he never drank much, and I knew he'd see him take a drink, but I would say he drank very much of that. And he was a quiet fella, and he never stood for no foolishness, by God. He'd just get up and tell them. So like one night in Chihuahua City, the train was leaving for Juarez, and they had about 15 to 20 empties to pull in. Shipping nothing to Horace. And this conductor told him he couldn't get the engine started. He said, well, I want it started in 5 minutes. If you don't start in 5 minutes, I'll blow your head off. He meant it too. Yeah, in less than 5 minutes, that engine was
Okay, Mr. Bud, I think that's enough. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.